I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
There was, oh, that's new. I like that one.
It's not, but you know, it's cool though. I mean that you, I mean, I just don't play it very often. I, you know.
Fair enough.
I got at the same time when I got that.
There was something wonderful this morning when I got up and got going. I woke up. I checked the email. I checked the social media to find out if any of you sent me any show topic ideas over the course of the evening, which you are welcome to do at the Rob Brown Show across all of the social media. And then the last thing I do, because there is no better source of happiness and joy to me on planet Earth than a good, hot, surface of the sun temperature shower first thing in the morning. And because I am an elder millennial, and we are, of course, as you older generations love to point out, attached to our phones at all times, your boy is known for, I don't care if you say TMI, Rob, your boy scratches the itch by checking out the sports news while I enjoy my nice, relaxing sauna shower in the AM.
Wait. So while you're in the shower, you're looking at your phone? I mean, it's one thing to do it on the toilet because that's what everyone does that. But so you're doing it in the shower.
When I tell you that a nice, hot, relaxing shower is the joy of my day.
Your phone is waterproof?
No, I'm just not clumsy. Okay, I am clumsy, but I don't drop my phone in the shower. And I don't sit in there and spin in circles. I just let it hit me in the back.
You don't have like a phone holder in your shower, do you?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I do. It's me. It's my hand. Okay. My hand is the phone holder in the shower.
Wow. So, dude, that's some kind of problem.
So I'm standing like the adult that I am, who makes the decisions that I wish to make in the mornings. Stream's going to be late because the piece that I need to set my camera
up
just
fell
on the floor.
I'd come and pick that up for you, but that requires bending. I'm not doing that.
As I scrubbed through the sports news this AM, enjoy my nice hot morning shower. And I pop open one of the many sources of sports news that I peruse every day in the AM after I snooze. Oh, I should have gone with that one earlier. I saw that yesterday the college football coaches poll was released. We're that much closer. The college football coaches poll came out yesterday. Coaches around America voted for who they believe are the best college football teams in America as we bat lead off before week number one. And I'm pretty pumped about it. Not that Texas, for the first time in the history of the preseason coaches poll, was voted number one. Not just that, just ahead of Texas is the number two Ohio State Buckeyes. Not just...
Why? Why are they number two? I would think they'd be lower. It's the team I root for, but unproven quarterback.
Yeah, I would also point out that when you look at the coaches' polls top 25, I think what you will find is that is a fine descriptor of a lot of teams.
I take it back. Texas, unproven quarterback.
Like I was saying, I think when you look at it, Texas at number one, unproven quarterback. Now, unlike most of the other schools, and I have asked the question why this is many times, and so far, no one has seemed to give me what I personally and subjectively believe to be an acceptable answer. But Texas gets all the benefit as if it is a guarantee that Arch Manning is going to be the greatest quarterback in the history of college football.
That boy Arch, he gonna do it.
He's got the pedigree. But Julian Sander at Ohio State, question mark. Number three, Penn State. We kind of know what Drew Aller is. As a matter of fact, I had this conversation earlier this week on a different show. As after Media Days, I've been invited to go on a handful of shows around the country to talk college football. And I have asked the question of multiple people, are we really locking in that Drew Aller is a dog? Because I go back to Penn State last year, and in every loss that Penn State suffered, and I do include the loss to Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, that sent Oregon as the consensus number one team to the college football playoffs, Drew Aller was a question mark. So is it really fair to say that Penn State has a proven quarterback? Number four, Georgia received three first place votes. If you want to keep score at home, Texas got 28, Ohio State got 20, Penn State got 14, Georgia got three. Gunnar Stockton, unproven quarterback at Georgia.
Wow, the mighty SEC. I mean, you got Texas, but have to remind yourself that Texas is in the SEC?
Not anymore.
Because I do. I still do.
Not anymore, but that is predominantly because this offseason has been all about the Horns. Whether they are going to hook them or be hooked, we don't know.
I was going to go down, but since we're not on the with the hook 'em thing, but since we're not on the stream, you're the only one that can see it.
So. By the way, stream will be up in the next segment, assuming that I can fix the equipment that I broke before we went live on air. Not broke. Temporarily and accidentally disassembled. I'll work on that. That being said.
Engineering, it was nothing electrical.
No.
So I just put it that way.
Not yet. Yeah. It's early. Unproven quarterback at number one at Texas. Unproven quarterback at number two, Julian Sand at Ohio State. I'm going to say unproven quarterback in Drew Aller at number three with Penn State. Unproven quarterback in number four, Georgia, with Gunnar Stockton. Here's a fun game that I've been playing the last couple of days with people, because one of the big conversations has been whether or not it is fair that the Notre Dame Fighting Irish are checking in at number five. Zero first place votes. That's important. Stick with me for just a second. But as we've talked about Notre Dame, and their outstanding running back, Jeremiah Love, and Marcus Freeman, who has picked up a lot of goodwill this offseason. We've talked about the unproven quarterbacks everywhere else. Quick, let's play a speed round of the Rob Brown Show Home Edition. Who's Notre Dame's starting quarterback this year? Anybody? Bueller? The answer here.
Catholic dude.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. I do know the answer.
I don't know if you're required to be that if you go to Notre Dame.
Not anymore.
Okay.
I say not anymore. I don't know if it was ever true that you actually had to be Catholic to go to Notre Dame or not.
I'm going to Google it. This won't be the weirdest thing I've ever Googled.
I'm sure it will be far from it. CJ Carr is the guy who will be starting this year under center for the Fighting Irish. And, kind of the same story. I don't know what the situation is going to be. Riley Leonard left. Riley Leonard took off. Carr is a dude that I just don't have a lot of information on. Jeremiah Love is going to be that offense. They're going to be a running, at least early, running offense. But I think it's fair to say Notre Dame is honestly, I was going to say appropriately placed at number five. But the more I think about it, the more I'm asking, is this another case of the conspiracy theorist having a case that Notre Dame always gets a little bit of love in the preseason poll because, without being in a conference, it's easier for them to find their way in if they start higher so that even if they take an L, and they may, it's not tough, but it's not an easy schedule for the Irish this year. They do have some SEC road games, some ACC road games. They've got the game against Clemson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, you're not required to be Catholic, but you are required to take theology courses.
Interesting. Interesting. I wonder if this is a case of the coaches genuinely believe that Notre Dame has a squad. Again, they have arguably entering the season the running back with the highest expectations. They have got a wide receiver group that, while largely, not entirely, but largely unproven, is expected to have some dogs on it.
Is this one of those things where, and I do believe in the past, I think Spurrier had said something about, do the coaches actually do this? Or do their handlers actually do this?
I'm sure that it's coach to coach. I'm sure that it's there are probably some coaches who sit down and fill it out, and there are probably some coaches who say, hey, stat nerd, get in here, fill out this piece of paper and send it in for
And
me.
Then they look it over really quick and hopefully and go, okay, you can put my name on it.
Maybe. I'm sure it is probably coach to coach. I'm sure that there are some of them that say, I can't be bothered with this. Who gives a bleep? And I'm sure that there are some of them that probably take great pride. I am sure that there are probably some of them that, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but maybe cast certain votes strategically, I think is how I'll phrase that. Notre Dame 5, and then checking in at number 6 are your Clemson Tigers, who also, for the record, did receive for the cow and meow offense 2 first place votes from the coaches. More than the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. More than anybody else that I did not mention. More than everybody that's not Texas, Ohio State, Penn State, and Georgia. Clemson checks in 6th with 2 first place votes.
I'm sure one vote was from Dabo and the other was from Belichick, who thought it was funny.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Oregon number 7, Alabama 8, LSU number 9, and rounding out the top 10, the University of Miami. South Carolina checks in at 13th in the overall coaches poll, the debut, the inaugural coaches poll of 2025-26.
It's good for Clemson that LSU is ranked, because that will look good on them when they beat LSU.
One of the takes I've had about that game from the beginning is, the loser of that game is not out of the playoffs. In fact, a far distance from it, because, obviously, the loser of that game could still very much go on to win their respective conference, the ACC, the SEC. The result of this game could be irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. Win your conference, you go. So that is probably a more likely reality for Clemson. And I have asked this question of a few folks over the last couple of weeks between our visits to SEC and ACC media days. I've asked this question a number of times, and it varies from media bro to media bro about how they've answered it. But I've asked the question before. Do you think that guys like Dabo Swinney, guys like Brian Kelly, do you think that they look at this game? And I think it's probably more apropos for Brian Kelly than it is Dabo Swinney. But I think it's got to be in the discussion. Do you think they look at a game like this and say, all right, if we don't win our conference, and it's very much on the table that Clemson does not. Miami is a top 10 team, according to the coaches. Louisville is a very good team this year. SMU checked in. I forgot where they were in the ranking. 16th. SMU 16th. And then there's, I think, in the ACC, I think there are a handful of wild cards. I think Duke is a wild card. I think Florida State is a wild card. Teams that we just don't know what they're going to be. So, it's not a guarantee, although it is the Vegas favorite result. It is not a guarantee Clemson wins the ACC either. And it is a far from guarantee that LSU does. In fact, the media selected them fourth. Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU. Fourth. Numbers are hard. To win the Southeastern Conference. I wonder how much guys like Dabo Kelly, Dabo Swinney, Brian Kelly, I wonder how much they look at a game like this and they say, okay, look, obviously the goal is to go win the conference. But if we don't, a game like this could be the make or break that gets us in or keeps us out. If we win this game, it is obviously as a matchup of not just top 10 teams, but a matchup of two top 10 teams with some first place votes on the line. It is a matchup that if we do not win the conference and we find ourselves in a gaggle of teams sitting on the bubble at the end of the year, trying to make the argument that we deserve to go. You all know those last few days before the college football playoff selection committee meets in a hotel ballroom in Dallas, Texas. We get those 3, 4, 5 shows on ESPN where they do whip around coverage to head coaches around the country. And those head coaches get on television and they plead their case as to why they really do deserve to go. Happened last year. Shano was in that group. Lane Kiffin was in that group, et cetera. Kayla DeBoer was in that group. Coaches who got on television and they went, well, we did this and we accomplished that and we beat them. And yeah, we had that loss, but that loss is actually really not that bad because this, that, and the other. This is the type of game that if you win at the end of the year and you don't win your conference, you get on TV and you say, look, we got challenged out of the gate and we rose to the occasion. We got challenged from the opening kick and we got that dub over a top 10 team. We deserve a bid. So I do wonder how that changes the mentality. I do wonder how that changes the approach, if at all, to that game. Does Brian Kelly look at this game? Does Dabo Swinney look at this game and say, look, the goal is to win the conference? And both of them have said, we've got what it takes to win our respective conference. But if we don't, if Clemson gets got by somebody and it costs them a shot, even if it's in the ACC championship game, if Brian Kelly is looking at finishing the year 10-2 and drops the SEC title game, or worse, doesn't make it into the SEC title game, that week one game is obviously the type of game that becomes either a revenue booster or, if you come out on the losing end of that, puts you in a spot where other coaches making their plea in those last few days look into a television camera and they go, look, that's a really good Clemson team, but they already had a crack at a top 10 team in LSU and they dropped the ball. They had their shot. They took it. They missed. We haven't yet. So give us our shot. They had theirs. They missed. Give us our shot. Or vice versa. LSU had a chance, but they didn't win the SEC. They went on the road. They lost to an ACC team. We deserve that shot. And what happens if both of these teams go 10-2? Both of these teams lose their conference championship games or don't make it in. And they are both on the bubble. The winner of this game has a leg up. So right out of the gate, that's heated. Clemson checks in number 6 in the preseason coaches poll with a pair of first place votes. LSU, their opening opponent, number 9. 0 first place votes. South Carolina at 13. Let's talk some college football. Of those two teams, South Carolina and Clemson, if I gave you $1,000 of Lonzo's hard-earned money, which of those two teams do you believe is most likely to finish at or above the ranking they have started at today? Clemson number 6, South Carolina at number 13. Let's talk some college football. We'll start making our NFL divisional champion projections and more all over the next 4 hours of fun and excitement. That is the Rob Brown Show here on the Fan Upstate.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
South Carolina opens the season ranked number 13 in the coaches preseason top 25 poll. The Clemson Tigers check in at number 6. Clemson did receive a pair of first place votes from the coaches in the preseason poll. The question that I have for you, and I would love to hear your arguments for either and or both. The question I have for you is, which of these two teams is more likely to finish in the same spot, or perhaps, maybe, just maybe, higher than they start the season at in the coaches' poll? That's the question that I am unloading on you today. I would love your answer. That is 844-326-3663, 844-FANFONE. I, yesterday, got asked to do a podcast yesterday evening. Sat down with a couple of fellas who do the College Jam podcast, a couple of boys from out in the Midwest. They are actually, hilariously, an Iowa fan, an Iowa State fan, and a Kansas State fan.
Can't get much more Midwest than that.
Yeah, couple of corn-fed boys. One of the fellas was this ex-military dude, and he came on. This dude's like, he's that guy that's so damn jacked that he can't sit back properly. You know what I mean? Like that style muscle where he can't sit back because the shoulders are too big. He's kind of like reclines against his shoulder muscles. This dude intimidated me from 850 miles away through a computer screen. I was like, damn, dude. Like, I think you can skip a gym day, buddy. I think you'll be okay. So anyway, we were talking a little college football. They asked me on to do a South Carolina Gamecock preview. They asked me on to basically just run over. What's the offense? What's the defense? What's the special teams? And while obviously we've done the deep dive plenty of times on what this offense is going to do, what they can be, et cetera, et cetera. Let me give you my main takeaway and then hear what you South Carolina fans have to say about it. Here's what I told them. The least surprising aspect of this, I think, is going to be that my primary take was, and I don't mean to be shocking, I don't mean for this to be too hot takey, but the main takeaway I had was, this team's going to be as good as Lenore Sellers allows them to be. I don't think that's too hot takey. I think this team is going to be as good as, this team is going to go as far as Lenore's takes them. That's not what the issue is. Obviously, the issue is, how good are the guys around Lenore's and how much are they going to give to him? And the big takeaway was obviously that this team is going to have to rebuild the entire interior of their offensive line. Now, the intent of this show today is not to be negative. I don't want to be negative. We are less than 3.5 weeks away from the start of the college football season. I would rather be super duper happy, fun, optimist, silver lining, yada, yada, yada. But I also am a realist. And I do think it is important to talk about, if you don't get where you want to be, what is going to be the reasoning behind that? What's going to be the cause of that? The good news is for South Carolina, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday very briefly, Rasul Faison got his waiver. Now, hilariously, you had to wait like 9 damn weeks to get that done. But hey, I'll take it done late over not done at all. You get your running back. This is something that Shane Beamer has all been on for weeks now. And why wouldn't he? Are you going to let my dude play? Or are you not? He gets the waiver for the 7th year of eligibility to move over and be the guy that carries the rock for South Carolina this year. Man is coming off of a year where he rushed for 1,845 yards and 13 touchdowns at Utah State. But I told these fellas last night, as they asked me to tell them the silver lining result and the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario for me was this. And if South Carolina does not finish where they start, 13th or higher in the poll, you are, as it stands, obviously with a 12-team playoff, one spot out of that mix. If you are not in that mix at the end of the year, I think it comes down to one thing and one thing alone. I've heard people say, well, it's about the wide receivers. Did Nick Harbor figure it out? Is Mazio Bennett Jr. going to be that guy that with only 30 catches last year gets a little more XP during the offseason and becomes the underneath possession receiver that he was when he played his high school ball here in the area, et cetera, et cetera? All fair questions. But to me, that's not what is going to keep South Carolina hovering around or jumping above that 13th spot that the coaches selected them in yesterday. It's very simply the ability to run the football between the tackles. Faison had a good year last year for Utah State. But, and this is one of those spots where, in years gone by, this would have been a take that would have aggravated, agitated, bothered a young Rob Brown. But a 2025 evaluation of college football makes me say a sentence that used to make me sick and say it with sincerity. The ability to do that at Utah State in no way, shape, or form guarantees the ability to put up same numbers when the heart of the defense you are going to be running into is dominated by Southeastern Conference caliber interior defensive linemen. We have looked around the D-lines of Georgia, of Alabama, of Texas. They are big, fast, mean, strong. And with all due respect to the Utes and everybody else, they just are not putting up defensive lines out in the Pacific Coast. They are just not putting up defensive lines.
You're an SEC hack. Next thing you're going to say is it just means more.
No, I'm not.
I am appalled. I cannot believe that you're saying that football is better in the SEC than it is in Utah.
Yeah, I know. It's a real hot take. It's a real, real hot take that there's a little bit more across the D-line in the Southeastern Conference than there is in the Big 12.
Here's what I hope. I hope he proves you wrong.
First off, I haven't said he can't.
Okay.
Let's be real clear.
All right. You were leading that way, it would seem.
Nope. I have not said he can't. I have not said that he won't. Let's keep it a buck. The kid just got his waiver. I don't think we've really seen enough out of him. Even in spring and all that, I don't think we've seen enough out of the kid to make a projection or a prognostication about what he is or is not capable of doing in the Southeastern Conference. What I'm saying is, when I look at teams that Utah has played last year, when he was putting up stacks, when he was putting up numbers, it's just that the talent level he is running against there this year is going to be dramatically bigger, dramatically stronger, dramatically better than it was last year. So to ask for this kid to go out there and put up over 1,800 yards and, 18 touchdowns or whatever, that's a big ask. It's just a big ask. I'm looking at some of the D linemen on the teams he's played against. Just because I went straight to their roster first. Utah State's interior defensive lineman, 270, 275. South Carolina's 310, 315. Now, just because you weigh 30 extra pounds doesn't mean you're inherently a better tackler.
I know you're looking at that, but what was the size of the offensive line he was playing in front of then compared to the offensive line that he's playing now?
Well, let's go look at the roster.
Because that also would help him more, I would think.
The offensive line he ran behind, this year's offensive line at Utah State, 285, 305, 300, 335, 300. South Carolina's projected offensive line size is 300, 330, 325, 335, 310. Again, about 30 pounds on average worth of difference. Now, again, that does not mean that it's going to be less successful, more successful. It just means that there's more mass and more ass between him and open grass. I just came up with that on the fly. That's pretty good.
That sounds like something you heard from somewhere, but if not, way to go.
Made that up on the fly. More mass and more ass between you and open grass. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty proud of that one.
You are.
I'm pretty proud of that one. That one felt pretty good. That's it. That's the question mark. Because if a team feels like they are going to be able to eliminate the interior run just with a base, if I do not feel like your running back, and now we know it will be face on, if I do not feel like your running back is a true, genuine between the tackles threat, and I feel like I can eliminate it with two defensive tackles and a linebacker, two linebackers and a defensive tackle, depending on if I'm 3-4-4, 3-3-3 with a star, whatever the case might be. If I feel like my base set can eliminate the interior run game, what does that allow me to do? I got one dude locked in on Lenore Sellers. I got two dudes set in the edge. You're not getting outside of the tackles, Lenore. Perhaps you'll have a little time in a clean pocket, but you're not getting to the outside. And granted, Lenore Sellers, Clemson fans know this as well as anybody, Lenore Sellers can run between the tackles like he's a running back. I think the fellas were a little shocked last night when I pointed out to him, this kid plays at 6'3", 240. That's the quarterback, man. Lenore plays at 240. He can run between the tackles. But considering the name of the game for this team is they go as far as Lenore Sellers carries them literally, I don't want him running between the tackles unless it is just the only way out. Your run game's going to have to be good. That is problematic when you are rebuilding the entire interior of the line. That's your kryptonite. That's your take. You add in the fact that from your defensive front seven, you have one starter coming back. Out of those seven guys, one starter coming back. That's a problem. So you're going to have to win shootouts, and you're going to have to win shootouts with a rebuilt interior offensive line, a running back whose success was found against dramatically smaller and slower defenses out west. Do you think they can finish higher or lower than 13th in the coaching poll? We'll talk about Clemson and where they started off in the preseason coaches poll coming up next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Damn, real good, Corey LaJoy, friend of the show.
Yes.
1-0 early in the week. Got some ground to make up. We are looking at evaluating, breaking down, critiquing, and picking apart the 2025's preseason coaches poll. The college football season starts up in 3 weeks and 2 days, if you are counting down. All of us are, I assume. So we are talking about 1, 2, 3, 21, 22, 23. Numbers are hard. 23 days until the college football season kicks off. It will be here before you know it. If that feels like forever for you, just keep in mind, it has been 23 days, actually 24 days, since we started SEC Media Days. Remember that? That was
no
more
way.
Days.
No way. Are you sure you're counting that right?
No, but pretty. Not really, but pretty sure. It's been 3 weeks because we did SEC Media Days. Then we did ACC Media Days the next
and
week.
Then there was a week.
Then they
between.
Had a week, and yeah. Now here we are.
Okay. All right.
So it's been more days since the beginning of SEC Media Days than we have remaining until we kick the football off.
Wow.
I know. Time flies. When you're getting old and living an existential crisis. So, we are picking apart the preseason coaches top 25, which dropped yesterday. I've had questions about teams at the top. And again, the narrative for me in this 2025 football season is that there is an impressive number of quarterbacks that could be exceptional. We could have one of, and I say this with great sincerity, we could have one of the deepest, most talented groups of college football quarterbacks across the country that we've ever had before. This could be one of the deepest crops of quarterbacks who are genuinely good that we have seen in college football. It is one of the reasons that I have spent the last few weeks of the college football offseason saying, I think college football parity is as good as it has been maybe in my lifetime. Now, I've had a, I don't want to say a very long lifetime, but I've been watching college football a very long time. Watched it with the old man growing up. Watched it as an adult. Never stopped. I cannot, off the top of my head, and some of you may want to take me back to the 1980s, 1990s, maybe early 2000s, whatever, and say, well, actually, Rob, this year we had the whatever. I feel like college football is as parity-filled and as deep, genuinely, as it has ever been. I can go down to number 17, Florida. DJ Lagway might be a dude. Number 19, Indiana. Ryan Horvath the other day had me rolling laughing because we had Adam Rittenberg, college football ace, on the show. And Ryan Horvath asked Adam Rittenberg, who is this year's Indiana? Rittenberg turned it around and said, before I answer, Ryan Horvath, who do you think is this year's Indiana? And Horvath's answer was, Indiana. And I don't think he's wrong. There's a very good chance Kurt Cignetti and the boys are back. This is as deep. Kansas State at number 20. I think Kansas State can win the Big 12. And Avery Johnson, their quarterback, could be as good as DJ Lagway and Lenora Sellers. Might be a total question mark. Lonzo's going to love him because he does, without question, have the best head of hair of any quarterback in college football this year. This might be the deepest group of quarterbacks that college football has ever had, at least in my lifetime. Obviously, not all of them are going to be as good as their coaches have spent the last 3 weeks telling us that they are. Obviously, some of them will. I honestly hope that more are than are not, because that's going to just make college football more fun for us as we get closer to the end of the season. But what I will say is this. To me, that makes having an experienced quarterback who is a, and this is a phrase I've said many, many times on this show over the past few weeks, the phrase proven commodity. This is the spot where I feel like having a quarterback who is a proven commodity is a benefit to a team. You don't have to spend as much time getting them ready, getting them up to speed. You feel like you can just turn them loose, work on the guys around them, and put the emphasis on picking up your run game, picking up your pass pro, picking up your wide receivers, whatever the case might be. One of the reasons that I have not pushed back on the large number of people that, whether it is because I have talked them into it or because they've talked themselves into it, one of the reasons that I'm not pushing back on people who are taking a little scratch in South Carolina to win the SEC. Yeah, questions about the run game. Yes, questions about the interior offensive line. Absolutely questions about the defense. How many of the six out of seven that are newbies as starters across the front seven are going to turn into dogs for the Gamecocks? We can only wait to find out what Clayton White does with them. But they have a proven commodity in quarterback in Lenora Sellers. Here's the thing. I have said that I am pushing pause. Not stop, not eject, not abort. But I'm pushing pause on what has been the primary argument that a lot of folks have made about Clemson. This is not, it. You know what, I guess to some degree it is. Because when you look around the college football talkosphere of the blathering idiots like me who are making our preseason predictions, projections, and prognostications, there are a lot of people who are picking Clemson. Again, two first-place votes in the coaches poll. There are, in total, five teams who received a first-place vote. Texas got 28 of them in first place. Ohio State, second place, got 20. Penn State, third, got 14. Georgia got three and is in fourth. Notre Dame got none, but got enough second and third place votes to jump over Clemson to the five spot. Clemson is number six, but Clemson got a pair of first place votes from the coaches. Most of the college football experts that I've spoken to have given me the reason for having Clemson where they have them as a playoff team. It's one of two. Number one, the ACC is not that good. And I've heard this expression a few times. There is no excuse for Clemson not to win that conference. Now, I push back on that a little bit. I do not trust Mario Cristobal in big games, as he has not once or like Steve Sarkisian has had a couple of spots where maybe he didn't run an offense the way I wanted him to in a big game. But he's got one, in my opinion, egregious sin, which is that Ohio State game last year. Not saying they would have won, but you've got a goal to go scenario with the game on the line. Your team has power run their way to this spot, and now all of a sudden, with Arch Manning, who's supposed to be the guy over on the bench, a guy that you have called in for this exact situation throughout the course of the year, you decide to end a round run against a very fast Buckeye defense known for their defensive backs and their ability to move laterally. That's a blown call. That pales in comparison to a game that you have heard me bring up a gazillion times this offseason. It is the one reason that I absolutely cannot, in fact, when I filled out my ACC projected order of finish, I put Miami fourth on that list. I think they have, at the very worst, the second most talented roster in the ACC. It, at the very worst. There's a lot of folks arguing their talent on paper is better than Clemson. I don't agree with it, but I'm just letting you know what the mindset is. I don't trust Mario Cristobal. So, a lot of folks are saying it is inexcusable for the Clemson Tigers to lose the ACC. And that's why they have them where they have them. And the proven commodity argument about Cade Klubnik is there as well. I am, as I have said a couple of times, pushing pause. Not saying he's not going to be that guy. Not saying he's not going to get that done. What I am saying is, he certainly, this has been the other big narrative, has a wide receiver core this year that looks better than it has the last couple of years. Antonio Williams, we had him on the show at ACC Media Days. High expectations. TJ Moore, Bryant Wesco Jr. John Blau has been repeating their names all the way through the offseason when we have talked about this football team getting ready. The wide receiver core is as good as it has been. But I also think it is fair to ask the question that is very similar to the question that we have asked about South Carolina. What is the run game? We asked John Blau about that on Monday. I said, look, man, Dabo's high on Cade Klubnik. Over the last 2 years, when we have spoken with Dabo, the war cry about Cade Klubnik has been, I got to get him to see the field and know when it's time to run the football. He's got wheels. I need him to do it. This year, we didn't hear that. And I don't know if that's because Dabo feels comfortable that Cade has figured it out, put two and two together, is going to be the running threat that Dabo Swinney's wanted him to be for a couple of years now. I don't know if that is because they feel like that's going to be less obligatory. We got more wide receivers doing more things down the field. He should have not fewer opportunities, but fewer spots where the opportunity becomes the best option to run the football this year. But the question mark is, what about just being able to run the football? What about the run game? We asked John Blau about Adam Randall on Monday, a converted wide receiver moving into the backfield. We asked him if that's going to be enough, if Gideon Davidson is going to break out this year. And John Blau, who I mean it when I say, we've had John on the show every Monday for, what, over a year at this point, dating back to mid-football season last year when he started making his appearances. John Blau knows as much about this football team as anybody that I have had the pleasure of speaking with. He is as knowledgeable about the roster, about the game plans, about the decisions. He is as knowledgeable about this football team as anybody I've spoken to. And when I've asked him about the run game, John Blau's response has primarily been, we'll see. We'll see. He said Randall's been taking the first team snaps. And I don't know if that is because nobody else has really broken out to take the job from a converted wide receiver, or if he has done such a good job of converting from wide receiver that he's just clearly the best there, or some combination of the two. And I think that is fair. The good news for Clemson is, even if you are talking about the teams that may prove to be their biggest challenges in the ACC, Miami, Louisville, SMU, if you look at the rosters of those squads, they are all going to largely be okay across the defensive line. I'm looking at Miami's right now. 270, 280, 300, 260. Like, that's not best of the best. And oh, by the way, one retarding starter across the front line. And not a dude who has a lot in the way of NFL draft prospect. So the good news for Clemson is that whereas South Carolina, when they get down the stretch, and as we've talked about a number of times, the back half of the schedule for the Gamecocks is, to me, the most difficult final 7-week stretch of anybody in college football. I firmly believe. LSU on the road, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ole Miss on the road, at the compound to take on the Colt, Texas A&M, back home for Coastal, wrapping it up at the crib with Clemson. LSU is a playoff threat. Oklahoma, I don't think they are, but a lot of folks at SEC Media Day selected Oklahoma as a playoff threat. Alabama, playoff threat. Ole Miss, outside playoff threat, but a lot of people believe in Lane Kiffin. Texas A&M, absolute playoff threat. Coastal Carolina, Clemson, national championship threat. And I could make the argument that so is LSU, so is Alabama. Outside, so is Texas A&M. You were talking about in your final seven games, you were talking about six of them being against playoff teams, playoff caliber teams. So the question is for South Carolina, how do you get through that stretch, especially if the run game isn't going well? Clemson obviously doesn't have that ahead of them. The run down the line for Clemson is nowhere near as difficult, and that's great news for them. But if they can't run the ball, could it be a spot where they end up one and done? SMU, Duke, Florida State, Louisville, and South Carolina with Furman Wedge in the middle. It's not an easy run down the stretch. That's why I've said I think the floor for this team could be genuinely 9-3. I think 10-2 is a reasonable, realistic outcome. But if the run game doesn't get going, if Randall ain't the guy, if Gideon doesn't step up, this team, to me, of the teams inside the top 10, is one of the teams that I think is in danger of falling out late. If you're going to fall out early, fight your way back. They are in the danger of falling out late, in my opinion. We're going to talk a lot more college football as the show rolls on. Texture says, the only commodity the University of South Carolina has is a terrible offensive line, the way the quarterback was running around all season long. We'll talk about that. And a lot more college football after Lonzo, who, if they gave out Heismans for sports flashes, would have all of them.
All that, Lenore Sellers was still able to beat Clemson. There's that. Atlanta Braves dropped a 3-1 loss to the Milwaukee Brewers last night. Eric Fadid took the 12th loss of the year, going 5.1 innings and surrendering 3 hits and 3 runs without recording a strikeout. The Braves went 330 from the plate and had only 3 at-bats with runners in scoring position. Atlanta is now a full 20 games below .500. Top 25 coaches poll in college football is out, and for the first time in the history of the poll, the Texas Longhorns will start at number one, just a few points ahead of number two, Ohio State. Penn State checks in at three. Georgia and Notre Dame stack up at four or five, ahead of number six, Clemson. Oregon, Alabama, LSU, and Miami round out the top 10, while South Carolina checked in at 13. Vikings second-year quarterback J.J. McCarthy will get the start against the Texans in Saturday's preseason game. McCarthy missed last year with a right knee injury, becoming the first quarterback selected in the first round.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Anaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.